My name's Maddie Dixon. I am 19 years old. I'm currently attending St. Charles Community College to get my Associate of Applied Science in Human Services. And there's other stuff, but that's like the most interesting basic stuff about me, really. So right now, like I said, I'm studying to get my Associate of Applied Science in Human Services. So what that entails is I have to do two practicums. And yeah, I have to do two practicums. And right now I'm doing my first one with NAMI St. Louis. And what I do personally at NAMI. So NAMI is like a grassroots volunteer-led organization, and we provide education, support, and advocacy for individuals living with mental illnesses and their loved ones or people's loved ones who live with like a diagnosed mental health condition, or even if they're starting to show the warning signs, we still offer support and advocacy for them, even if we also offer for individuals who are resistant to treatment, which is something that's a little bit unique to NAMI. So what I do, I am an intern there, like I said. And what I do besides, general office work, I answer our helpline phone calls. So NAMI has, it's not like a hotline because it's not really for emergencies. It's more of like a warm line. So individuals can call about, if they need resources for themselves or their loved ones who are struggling. We offer support and like finding resources for like, food insecurity or housing insecurity. We don't really give referrals, but we can lead individuals towards programs that, take things like Medicaid and Medicare or places that take private insurance to help them kind of find things that can help with their mental health journey. So I do that. And I also, we have a program called Ending the Silence where we speak to school-age children and high schoolers. So right now we kind of usually do it more for fifth graders and for high schoolers. But we're really flexible. So before this whole COVID thing happened, we were actually doing or planning to do 7th graders. So we've only had it in the St. Louis branch for about a year or two. So we're still kind of branching out and figuring stuff out. We also talk to school staff and we talk to parents and caregivers about mental illness, just kind of like a basic educational program about that. And what's unique about that is that the two volunteers who lead the session, and sometimes it's more, but it's usually just two, they are people who have lived with a mental illness, like a diagnosed mental health condition, or they are loved ones of someone who lives or has lived with a mental health condition. So what I do in that is I am the young adult presenter. So that means that what I do is after the lead presenter is done, kind of giving their presentation about mental health and mental health warning signs and warning signs of suicide. I take some time to talk to everyone about my own experience with living with mental health conditions and kind of like what I have done to help myself recover, things I do kind of like to cope and what to make myself feel better. So that was a lot, but that's kind of what I do at NAMI, pretty much. I was officially diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder and major depressive disorder when I was 16 years old. But for me, it's kind of been something that's been persistent throughout my whole life. I wasn't an unhappy kid per se, but I was definitely more of an anxious kid, and I did have kind of like a depressive affect to me, kind of. But it wasn't really something that was a problem for me. So when I was 16, it was my sophomore year of high school. My best friend died after she completed suicide, and out of respect for her and her family's privacy, I'm not going to mention her name. And at the time, it felt to me at the time like it was something that came totally out of the blue. Because, you know, no one really expects to kind of wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, to get ready for school. And, you know, you see like 20 missed phone calls and, you know, another 20, 25 text messages like, oh, you know, so-and-so, you know, died last night. So that was a pretty, that was kind of what really started, you know, that dark time for me. That, and I wasn't quite sure how to cope with it really. But, you know, I was doing okay for a little bit. And I mean, as okay as you can get with something like that. And I was starting to recover a little bit. And then, things just kind of started piling up. You know, I had a boyfriend at the time and he ended up cheating on me just like, I believe probably 3 or 4 months after that happened. And then, I'd started kind of fall out with my friends after that because, you know, that kind of on top of what had already happened was just a little bit too much for me to handle. So, I started struggling more with depression and anxiety, and it got to a point where, you know, I would come home from school, I would go in my room, I would lock my door, I would kind of just lay under the covers and kind of stare at the wall, you know, until, you know, I went to sleep really. You know, I kind of stopped, you know, doing my schoolwork. I stopped doing things that I cared about. I didn't really put too much effort into my physical appearance. And I stopped talking to people, which, didn't really help, the situation that I was in regarding my friends. So I was kind of in a dark place for a while regarding that. So I was kind of just, I don't want to say I was comfortable, in my, you know, in that episode, but, it was just something that I also didn't really have the energy to kind of deal with. I was just trying to take it as it came, or at least I thought I was. Like, no one really realizes, you know, that they're, well, when something becomes your normal, it's so hard to realize that that isn't what's considered normal. So for me, it wasn't until I actually started experiencing panic attacks. And then I actually experienced one in front of my parents, which I had tried to, you know, hide, you know, my feelings and my, you know, my illness from them because I felt embarrassed about it. But I had a panic attack in front of them. And that's kind of when we all collectively realized that something was like seriously wrong. And it wasn't just, you know, some people try to sometimes chalk it down to, you know, teenagers being dramatic. Yes. I mean, my parents never did that, but it was just, you know, it kind of got to that point. Yeah. So it got to that kind of extreme point. And that's when we realized, you know, there is something that is seriously like clinically wrong. And then we went to my doctor or my pediatrician. And that's when she diagnosed me with generalized anxiety disorder and a major depressive disorder. So my friends had kind of, or the friends that, you know, I hadn't totally, you know, stopped talking to, they had kind of like known that something was wrong, but I think they were kind of scared to bring it up, which I feel like is another misconception that people have where people, I believe, might think that, you know, oh, well, if you bring it up, then you're going to make them feel even more depressed. So people had kind of known, but no one didn't really say too much. They were just kind of like, oh, you know, this kind of sucks, but I hope you start feeling better. But you know, as you can tell, I didn't feel better. Yeah. My parents were pretty much the people who kind of, after, you know, I had my panic attack, who kind of helped me reach out to start getting treatment as opposed to kind of just, you know, letting me loaf around and being bedridden from, you know, depression and anxiety.
Yeah. So when did your situation reach its worst?
So my situation for me reached the worst. It was that December of 2016. Yeah. I started contemplating suicide because, you know, I just felt pretty just hopeless and bleak. And I felt, you know, not embarrassed, that's not the right word. I felt like ashamed that I didn't notice the warning signs from my friends when, you know, they were struggling and they passed away. And I feel like everyone who experiences the loss kind of goes through this where it's like, oh, you know, what could I have done to change that? Maybe if I had done this, things would have turned out differently. So I was really struggling with feelings like that. And I began to place a lot of blame on myself, even though, I mean, now I know that there was really nothing that I could have done. But at the time, it was kind of just such an overwhelming, overbearing feeling that combined, you know, with the person that I cared about the most cheating on me. And for a 16-year-old, I mean, especially, that's a lot to deal with. And I just wasn't, you know, coping positively with it. And that December, I believe it was around the yes, it was around Christmas time. So I think it was mid-December. It was kind of an attempt, to harm myself and commit suicide. But it was something that did happen. And I was lucky enough that it was interrupted by someone calling me and talking to me because they had noticed that, you know, I was starting or not starting. They had noticed that I had been, you know, not myself. So I was lucky in that regard, that my experience had been interrupted. But that was definitely the lowest point for me was, when it got to that point where I had, you know, attempted to attempt suicide. It definitely was hard. So after I had gotten diagnosed, it took me a really long time. It felt like a really long time, but it took me a couple months, to kind of accept it because, you know, when you're in high school, people are like, oh, these are the best years of your life. Like, I don't know. And I felt kind of like ashamed, like, oh, I should be happy. Like, why am I struggling with this so much? This isn't normal that I'm experiencing this. So I felt really embarrassed and ashamed that I was even struggling in the first place. So that was a little bit of a hurdle for me to even start the road to recovery. But eventually, I kind of learned to accept it in the way that, like, yes, you know, I have these diagnosed conditions, but that doesn't define the person that I am. It's just something that's a part of me. But I am not depression. I am not anxiety. You know, I'm my own person. And once I kind of started changing my mindset, and changed the way that I looked at, you know, my mental health conditions, I kind of started to be a little bit more open and more receptive to treatment. So when I had been first diagnosed, you know, those months prior, I had been prescribed, an SSRI, which is a serotonin uptake or reuptake inhibitor. So that's commonly prescribed for, depression and anxiety. But I was a little bit more, persistent in taking it, whereas before I was kind of like, oh, well, who cares if I take it? Like, it's not going to improve my situation. But once I started consistently taking my medication every single day and I became more hopeful and responsive to my treatment, I noticed that it had started helping a lot. On top of that, I had also been referred to a therapist. So the therapist that I've been referred to specialized in talk therapy. So every couple of weeks I would go see my therapist and we would talk about you know, whatever I was feeling. And she would kind of help me reframe my thoughts in such a way that I could look at my situation in my life a bit more positively, instead of just finding, you know, the negatives and everything, or, you know, I guess, yeah. So she also helped me find coping strategies that worked best for me. So I didn't mention this at the start, but I've been drawing since I was a little kid, and it's always something that I've loved to do. And she recommended to me that I start putting, you know, my feelings and my thoughts into art. So I started using art as a coping strategy to kind of, you know, keep me moving along, you know, that path to recovery. So whenever I was feeling like a negative emotion, like if I was super angry or super stressed out, you know, even taking, like, I would just take crayons and scribble something just to kind of put or take out the thoughts that were in my head and kind of make like a physical manifestation of them just to get them out. And then, I mean, sometimes too, like I would just sit there and I would draw like really detailed pictures. I would do, you know, sketches, just little things like that actually helped quite a bit. And it also prevented me from going back to negative coping strategies such as self-harm. She also suggested that I do more exercise. And obviously, you know, it doesn't have to be anything like, oh, you know, running 10 miles like every day, like nothing like that. So even something like walking, just something like as minor and as, you know, easy as that, she recommended I do that just to get myself, like, you know, up and out of the house, and in my community and walking around, just getting outside. And so I would walk around, you know, and I would just kind of do some of that physical activity that I had been, you know, neglecting for the last couple of months. And, you know, exercise helped me quite a bit. And I had mentioned that I had kind of stopped talking to my friends when I was in, you know, the worst of it, or the worst of my situation. But I actually invited my friends to go on walks with me, just so I wouldn't have to do it by myself. And it kind of helped me stay consistent with that as well. So not only was I, you know, exercising my body after, you know, months of just not really caring, but I was also kind of regaining those friendships and, you know, just making my situation better in like every aspect that I could. So at the time, I wish someone had told me that, because like I said before, it was hard for me to accept my diagnosis, and that kind of put off my my treatment for months. I wish someone had told me near the beginning that a mental health condition doesn't define you. You can be defined by the fact that, you know, you like to play piano, or, you know, that you love to draw, or, you know, you're an athlete. Those are the kinds of things that make you who you are. You know, you wouldn't go up to someone with the flu and be like, oh, you know, that's all you're ever going to be is, you know, sick. Be like, you know, you don't say that. You look at the other qualities of the person and you realize that's who they are. They're not just this medical condition. I also, not advice for me per se, and I think this is something that we as a society can continue to work on, is mental health education. So my friends kind of, like I said, they didn't really, they were worried about me, but they didn't know how to really help me. So I guess advice or a wish that I have is that, you know, we continue to do mental health education. And, you know, more and more young people especially get educated on that, so they can help their friends and, like, notice, you know, when things aren't right, and notice or realize how to help their friends instead of being like, oh, well, I'm not sure. Because it is a confusing and it's a tricky thing, but I feel like education could also help quite a bit.
So what would you say to somebody that was struggling with suicide, depression, anxiety, any other mental illnesses right now?
So if someone is experiencing suicidal ideation, I would say the best thing to do, as scary as it sounds, would be to tell a trusted adult. Because suicide is, even if it's just kind of like ideation, it's still something that needs to be taken extremely seriously. And it's something that is incredibly hard to deal with on your own. And in a way, it's an emergent, like a medical emergency. So if someone is experiencing suicidal ideation, or if someone knows someone who is experiencing suicidal ideation, it's really important that they seek out, you know, the help of a trusted adult or a school counselor, or even, you know, like a coach or their parents or just anyone who they trust, or anyone who they feel is equipped to deal with the situation. For people who feel that they may be struggling with symptoms of a mental illness, whether it be depression, anxiety, et cetera, it's also a good idea to seek out a trusted adult and let them know as well, especially if it's a younger person, because those trusted adults can have or can help you find resources that can help you recover, help you put you in a better place, and help you seek out, you know, treatment or seek out ways that can help you positively feel better. Mental health conditions are medical conditions. Just like if your friend fell off their bike and, you know, they hurt their leg, you wouldn't just sit there and be like, oh no, your leg, that's terrible. You would go find someone or find resources like a Band-Aid or something, you know, to help your friend out. Or even if it was you who fell off the bike, you would still seek out something or someone to help you. I guess what I would want to add is that we live in an age right now where mental illness or mental health conditions are being more and more diagnosed every day. It's something that is still very prevalent within the world. So I guess what I want to add before I go, is to keep educating yourself, on mental health conditions. Keep looking out for your friends. Say something if, you know, you feel something is wrong. I absolutely promise that if you ask someone who, you know, seems like they're having a hard time, like if they're doing okay, or if they're thinking about suicide, or if they're struggling, you know, with anything, you're not going to put the idea in their head that, you know, they're broken, or you're not going to put the idea in their head of, you know, wanting to complete suicide. It's more so about looking out for one another, and letting people know that they're loved. Especially in this day and age, I feel that people can be particularly nasty to each other. Especially with the internet, it's so easy to just say something rude and awful to someone over the internet because, you know, you don't know that person. You don't see them like face to face. So just kind of feel like it's so easy for us to be hateful towards each other or to be ignorant towards each other or single out people for whatever reason. So I guess just keep supporting each other, keep loving each other, keep looking out for each other. And know when, you know, you need to seek help from someone you trust, either whether it's for yourself or for someone else.